You might have heard that about 9 weeks ago, Australia officially has its own space agency, okay? That's pretty exciting. We didn't have one, now we have one. It's called the Australian Space Agency, which I think we can all agree gets the job done very well. Now, we're very excited to have two space industry experts to talk to you tonight about Australia's place in space. We have Andrea Boyd from the European Space Agency and Dr. Naomi Mathers from the Space Industry Association of Australia. They're going to be talking about where we've come from, where we're going, and what's in the future of Australia in space. Now, to introduce them and to host the discussion, we have Mike Thompson, who's an amateur astronomer and communicator, who has an online service called Backyard Astroscience, what does Backyard Astroscience do? It helps budding astronomers and not-so-budding astronomers to broaden their horizons.
Okay, it's an online education offering. It's targeted at novice astronomers. So you may be a junior astronomer, you may be a new adult astronomer. But what it does is it brings together tips and techniques on how you use your telescope. And it welds those together with a whole series of projects which build your skills up, from really basic skills like spotting constellations and knowing which constellations you're looking at, all the way up to being able to use remotely controlled telescopes to monitor exoplanet transits.
Fantastic. So if you're into space, which I'm assuming you are, you should definitely check out Backyard Astroscience. I'm going to pass over to you now, Mike. Sure. Everybody give Mike a very warm welcome.
Thank you.
Take it away.
So hopefully you did get out and get a chance to have a look through the telescopes while it was clear, and now we can snuggle in and have a good panel discussion on the future of the Australian space industry. So to do that, as we've just been told, we've got two fantastic panellists who we're going to bring up right now. Naomi Mathers. Where's Naomi? Hello, Naomi.
Thank you.
And Andrea Boyd.
So where would you?
Come on, grab a seat. Shall I be lucky in the middle now? Naomi.
Yes.
Let's kick off with why are you here? Why are you a panellist?
Because I love space, like everybody here. But what excites me, as well as the innovation and all the rest of it, is the engineering and the industry. I want to see Australians be employed in this sector. So that's what I've done. I've done the research bit. I'm an aerospace engineer. But what I've spent a lot of my time doing is helping to raise the profile of the Australian space industry, and I've had the pleasure over the last sort of 6 to 12 months of actually doing a few projects for the state and federal governments evaluating Australia's space capability, and we have a huge amount of very hidden space capabilities
which we're going to talk a lot we're going to talk about as we go through this. And Andrew.
Yeah, so you guys know what I do. My day job, unfortunately, I had to move out of Australia because there wasn't really space stuff here, and that's what I wanted to do back, 10 years ago. Now there is a lot here, and one of my major side projects as well has been working with Parliament and working with politicians to get the Australian Space Agency off the ground over the last few years. So really, really pleased that we have it and super proud that you can find an Australian Space Agency page. So keen to keep helping with that and chat about it more tonight, because Australia is pretty awesome. We just don't always promote ourselves so much.
Yeah. I was talking to my team about this panel discussion and the fact that Andrea was going to be here. And one of the things we thought we should pass on is a puncture repair kit.
Now, I can tell Alex to take his finger off the hole now.
Show of hands, who gets the gag? Nobody gets the gag. Do you want to explain the gag? Oh, somebody got it. There we go.
We had a small hole in the space station last week. And when they found it, first of all, one of the astronauts poked his finger to seal it briefly before they got a proper seal.
But it speaks now.
Thanks. I'll pass it on.
Okay, so let's crack on with the first topic that we want to go through. And really, what we're talking about is space is more than space travel. When we think about space, often we think about launching rockets, we think about going to the moon or Mars or travelling through space, but in industry terms, space is much more than that. And I think for our panellists, can you give us a brief view of what you feel space means to industry, particularly to Australia?
Am I going to kick off? So when we sort of broadly categorise how we use we call it space-derived data. It's how do we use the information that we're gathering from satellites in space. And there's three broad ways we use it. One is satellite communication, so no mobile phones without it. One is positioning, so no GPS without the information from positioning satellites. And one is Earth observation, so the pictures we take from space. And a lot of what we do then is receive that information and put it together to use in agriculture and mining and aviation and all sorts of other things. So a lot of what we do with space is actually to the benefit of people on Earth.
And even more day-to-day stuff as well. So every time you use FBOS or an ATM, that's bouncing timing off a satellite, so you couldn't do any banking or regular shopping without it. Every time you look at the surf reports and the weather reports, that's all satellite-based information. So it's really, you know, GPS is integrated into so many apps that we use and we wouldn't survive 5 minutes in our modern lives without satellites, especially in Australia where what's your alternative? Fly a plane over the entire continent and all the oceans every day is a bit impractical. Yet we don't have any Earth observation satellites yet, so we're looking towards building that capability.
A lot of the technology is then about building the instruments to collect that data. So the engineering piece, the innovation piece, the research piece is often around building the instruments for satellites, building the ground stations to receive that information, or then processing.
Yeah, because you don't need to do it by yourself or from scratch. Yeah. Australia's really good at building the instruments. We've got a great clear sky to see everything from the ground. So we contribute that. And now that we've got a space agency, legally you can finally partner with other space agencies to secure access to this data. And we can then contribute in instrumentation and sensors and ground processing and infrastructure as a proper team partnership, which we couldn't do before.
Yeah. We've already talked about the fact that there's a lot of grassroots advantages or grassroots benefits from space technologies. What have we got in Australia that makes us specifically good at delivering those sorts of technologies? What is special about Australia that allows us to participate in that space industry?
Who's jumping?
I'll let you go first.
Okay, that was funny to you. So for us, it's our position on Earth is really unique. So for ground stations, we're really world leading. For example, at the very beginning, back in, I think it was 64, Landsat started, and they were just processing and putting a straight contrast on everything and shipping out the images to the world. And Australia was like, thanks, we're a white sheet of paper. So we really pushed and requested the original tapes, the original data sets, from America. It took about 2 weeks to get here by shipping. I said that to a student once, and he's like, why? Was email really slow? And I was like, And there were days before that. So we got it over and did the raw processing and figured out how to do that ourselves and really set ourselves up from the very beginning then and have built on that and built on that to be the world leaders in processing of data from all these different sources and the algorithms and everything behind that. Australians are complete world leaders at that.
And that idea of location, 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 it's not just true in real estate, it's also true in space. So the ability to have ground stations to receive the data. So as anybody else's satellites orbit the Earth, there's a big chunk of land mass in the southern hemisphere where we can receive that data. That's really important for receiving data from the Earth observation, positioning or communication
satellites.
And that
satellites. We're radio quiet and politically stable, that really
all
helps
that
in this
stuff.
Point. Yeah.
And so we also have one of the three NASA deep space tracking stations. We also have one for the European Space Agency. So because of our location. The other thing it's important for too is we move forward, they call it space situation awareness. It's the tracking of space debris and being able to monitor what's happening in space. And so because, again, we've got the clear skies, we've got the large landmass, Australia is really important in the world to be able to monitor what's happening, so looking up. So it's not just for astronomy, it's also for monitoring the hardware.
Yeah, and space debris is a really big deal. I mean, we have to constantly monitor it for satellites. We track everything above 10 centimetres. We have to move the entire space station out of the way, not infrequently, because there's a, 20 centimetre, 10 centimetre piece of debris, and we have to move the entire space station out of the way so that we don't get hit and get a bigger hole.
And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here, talking about what we're doing with that. With our expertise in astronomy that we have here, the location and the instrumentation, Australia's actually building up a capability where we're developing lasers that will actually be able to move that space debris. So by using photon pressure, you can actually slow down small pieces of debris. And when you slow something down, it drops its orbit. So you actually encourage it to deorbit faster. So we're pulling together our research expertise, our location, our technology to then contribute in that global way.
Yeah. And for Australia itself, you can get really big picture stuff. So this is a map. Yeah. It's a composite map of satellite data showing all the water movement in Australia from 1987 to last year. And you can see really clearly how things have been migrating around and where the waterways are, which is really important for life. Yeah.
And that raises a really good point, I think, that... this isn't just about the space industry building rockets and sending satellites into orbit. It's also about getting the data back from those satellites and then being able to analyse it and produce consumable information like that from the raw data. And it seems that Australia is extremely well placed for that. We're actually very good at building stuff. Despite, we were talking upstairs just before the session, the car industry in Australia has basically had the guts kicked out of it, and that's been seen by the general public, and I'm representing the general public in this discussion, as the destruction of that manufacturing capability. But apparently that's not the case. We're actually really good at building things.
We are, and I think where we're good is in the niche areas. So when we're competing against mass production, then you're competing with something that anybody can do, and you need to a really, really cheap factory, and you need very basic knowledge and infrastructure. When you start talking about what's happened with a number of companies is that they've shifted from car manufacture to manufacturing components for advanced aerospace, and we've also got examples where they're doing it for space applications. So a lot of the additive manufacturing, there's some great capability at Monash University and CSIRO, Deakin, RMIT. They're all doing... Where the additive manufacturing or the 3D printing comes into it is that in Australia, we can design the material, we can design the process, and we can design the component, the physical design, to be able to manufacture something that could never be manufactured in a traditional subtractive way, so machining something, and is really high performance. So it's the really high value add. So these are the really the cutting edge stuff, and you only would ever manufacture these in very small numbers. Mm. And then you charge a premium for them, yeah. Which is a good place to be if you're talking about it.
That's nice. And with the niche things as well, in Australia, right here in Melbourne actually, there was an engineer that pioneered different materials and layering of materials in a certain way. If any of you have friends at BAE, you probably know him. So he also helped then work with my work, like specifically my work, Avisa, and you can see the different iterations of a skin suit. So astronauts in space, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you're a bit taller. And then you stand up and you get back to your regular size. So, you know, take your height and first thing in the morning if you want to be really tall, because your spine elongates a little bit. But in space, it elongates and then kind of doesn't go back again while the astronauts are on orbit. And that's a problem because then when they come back, you get, you know, kind of a bit of a crush, and you get like some lower back pain, and that's a problem. So we're looking at a suit that puts axial loading on the shoulders and can kind of bring your spine back to a regular size. And there was a Melbourne engineer that was really instrumental in doing all of that material for it, and then coming up with the final product that then the astronauts have now used in space to assist with the spine problem that is a regular thing for astronauts. And that came out of Melbourne.
Can I pick up on this one too? Because this is a really interesting example of how space spins in and out in other industries. Sometimes we take things from other industries and bring them into the space industry. Sometimes we take space technologies and spin them out. And so James has just started up a company called Astrometrics to commercialise this. And yes, there's a space application, and he hopes this will be adopted for astronaut use. But there are also a number of medical uses that this would benefit people on Earth. So there's a number of spinal conditions, ageing, things like that. There's also the elite sport sector. And one of the things that I learned doing the review is
that skin suits for elite sport, the global industry is worth over $3 billion US a year. So if you're talking about growing jobs and things like this, this is really important to spin this technology out into elite sport, let alone all the wonderful things you could do for the medical and disability type areas.
Do we have any other examples of that kind of unintended benefit from what started off as a space technology but becoming something that's used back here on Earth?
There's constant spin in and spin out.
Yeah.
There's another research area we found which was looking at fatigue. So astronauts, the schedule they keep on orbit, and because of the
it's pretty chockers. They have no gaps in their day.
Terrible. Yeah. But it's exactly the same with shift workers and in mining and people who work on remote rigs and things like that. So there's a lot of research or work that's done in the space industry that is spinning to spin out to another.
I know when I was preparing for this session, this question had come up about the unintended benefits of space technologies, and the one that immediately popped into my head
was Velcro.
It was the non-stick frying pans.
Oh yeah,
right. And which is a complete furphy, right? They've got nothing to do with space technology. But the one that popped up, which actually did hold water, was a camera on a chip. So who's used their smartphone today to take a photo? Right, and that's a camera on a chip embedded in your smartphone. And that technology came directly out of space-based technologies.
The one when I was many, many decades ago when I was doing research, the material I was using, so I was working on what they call deployable structures. It was an inflatable antenna, basically, to talk to space. But the material came out of the space industry because you needed very, very lightweight material that could work in that environment. So that was what the covering on the lunar lander was.
Yes.
It then moved into the food industry because it was incredibly stable. And the material I was building my antennas from was actually what they used to build wine casks. So I had lots of friends offering to help help me source the material by drinking lots. I said, well, no, actually, I want the raw material preferably, but it all comes in and out.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So, quick poll from the group. Where this started was about how we're going to build stuff, right? Who's used or been involved with any 3D printing? A lot of hands going up. We're going to see a lot more of that. We're going to see a lot more of that. Building those specialist components.
Yeah.
Small market, high value. And that seems to be something that Australia is particularly well placed to handle.
So we're actually the first country at Monash. They were the first one to build an entirely 3D printed jet engine. And they fired it. It's operational now. It's now being used on aircraft.
Fantastic.